G&D live in D.C. on the Fan, awaiting word on a vote from the D.C. City Council this afternoon that is expected to be very team-friendly. Supposed to get the 8 yeses needed. Now, there's another vote coming September 17th if everything goes well today before things go to Congress, and who knows what happens at that point. But today would be a big step for the Commanders to come back home to D.C. Show's brought to you today and every day by the law firm Condori and Murrah. They're going to help you to set up a living trust or put together a medical power of attorney. All the important stuff you got to do that's not that fun, they can handle. Schedule a consultation with their attorneys today at kmlawyers.com and mention us to get a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. Let's talk a little Commanders football, get a national perspective. Our camp coverage on the Fan comes your way via Paul Henry's window installation. And Mike Florio is with us right now from Pro Football Talk to discuss what's going on with Terry McLaurin and hop around the NFL. Mike, thanks for a few minutes. We know you're busy. We appreciate it. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
Doing
very well,
well.
We're all kind of in shock about how far apart the team and McLaurin are, because he has been the anti-diva, like Mr. Good Guy here for years, and he's doing a decent job playing the part of the businessman now. The hold-in continues. He requests a trade. What's your take from afar on what's happening here between the team and the player?
Well, you know, the threshold question is the easiest one to answer. Does he deserve a new contract? Absolutely, yes. The problem is when he's at 15.5, when the market has stretched past $40 million per year in new money average, how do you properly affix a value that will make both him and the team happy? And they're clearly very far apart. I've seen different numbers out there. I think Stephen A. Smith was saying that he wants, or wait, they offered 27. I've seen he wants 35. Look, if it's anything like that, yeah, that's why they don't have a deal. The gap is too big. And then the structure is always part of this too. How much is fully guaranteed at signing? Is it 1 year? Is it 2 years? What kind of flexibility does the team have to get out of it if, once he gets past the age of 30 and his birthday is coming up in September, he begins to see an erosion of his skills? So these are all things, when you get to the third contract, that become very challenging. And this is where we are with a receiver who's going to be 30. Look around the league. How many receivers keep performing at a very high level beyond their 30th birthday? That's the challenge. And you know, the thing that's in McLaurin's favor, you got 2 more years of Jaden Daniels under a slotted rookie deal as the second pick in the draft. It is peanuts in comparison to what he's eventually going to make, but they can't pay him anything until the 2026 regular season ends. The next 2 years are the time for the other players to get paid. And I think that's one of the reasons why he's making this move. So that's it in a nutshell. And, you know, he held out, lost $200,000, never should have held out because you can't get that money back. The fines are non-waivable when you're on your second contract. And now he just hopes that they will, before week one, give him an offer that he'll deem worthy of acceptance, unless they do indeed decide to trade him. But I remember Myles Garrett back in Super Bowl week put out the statement and made the rounds at the media center saying how he wanted out of Cleveland. And there's nothing like money to make a guy decide he wants to stick around.
Well, I was saying earlier, T. Higgins, Debo.
Ayuk last year.
Ayuk, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of guys who have asked for a trade. It didn't get him anywhere, and most of them are on new deals now.
Well, that's right. That's absolutely right. And sometimes you have to do that in order to shake things up to get what you want. And this is one of the reasons why there are plenty of agents who think you should never hold out, that you can be more of a distraction in the building than you are out of the building, especially when you're talking about daily fines that can't be waived, and then the possibility that the team is going to stay dug in, they're not going to be motivated to cave, and then you start losing game checks, not just at the value of what you're due to make this year, but as a practical matter, at the value of what the team is willing to pay if you would go ahead and do a deal and show up. So it was smart for him to show up. He shouldn't have held out, and now he's creating a distraction. And apparently, Michael Parsons liked the sound of it because the next day he does the same damn thing.
Mike Florio with us here on Grant and Danny. So, Mike, help me out with something. I from the team's, or maybe from Terry's perspective, regardless of where you look at it, isn't this a CBA problem? And you kind of touched on this, but there's only so much you can do. There's only so many levers you can pull, only so much anger you can express or demands that you can make. He's under contract for 25 this year, and if they feel like it, 28, or give or take, however much the franchise tag is next year for wide receivers, the team's got him. He's got to play football for this football team here in this city at some point to get what he wants. That's kind of the ultimate hammer to me from the team side. Tell me where I'm off here.
No, you're right. And remember, the cap number is 25, but the cash is only 15.5.
Right. Yeah.
All the player cares about at this point is the cash.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the cap number helps him with the franchise tag next year because that's the basis for a 20% raise. So that'll get him to 30 under the tag next year. But this is about getting paid now, and 15.5 is well below what players are getting. But yeah, when they beef up the fines in the CBA, when they make the fines non-waivable, because the old play used to be guy holds out, racks up fines, guy comes back, and most teams will say, forget about the fine. They can only do that now if a guy is holding out under his rookie contract, period. So that makes it harder for players to hold out. And they've made it harder for rookies to hold out because you used to have a small window where you could hold out and not lose a year of credit toward free agency. Now, if you hold out one day, you lose the year of credit toward free agency. So they have systematically made it harder for players to legitimately violate their contracts. And anytime anyone says player needs to honor his contract, my response is there are two contracts. There's the individual contract between player and team. There's the broader contract between all players and all teams. And that's the CBA. And you're right. By adjusting the CBA to make it harder to violate the individual contract, it makes less sense to do it.
So, Mike, what are the chances of a few different outcomes here? It feels like them trading him is pretty remote, right? The him showing up and playing feels inevitable, maybe not imminent, but it's got to happen. And then the idea that maybe, is there a path to, like, Hendrickson is doing the hold-in, but he's not feigning an injury. Terry's on PUP with some mystery ankle or whatever. What's to prevent him and the agent from going PUP to IR and actually accruing time? I don't know that it's realistic, but I guess that's still a club they've got in the bag. Like, how do you think this thing ends?
Yeah, and I don't know if Hendrickson isn't saying he's injured, because I think the Bengals will not play ball with a deliberate and conscious hold-in. They were fining Ja'Marr Chase last year when he wasn't practicing. It wasn't a big deal. It almost blew up. But I heard as I was tracking that story that they were fining him, and they may have waived him because they can for his deal. So that's part of this too. They could be fining Hendrickson if he doesn't practice unless he says, I'm injured. And that's something I wrote the other day. You know, this idea that players who are disgruntled should fake injuries, it was what former NFLPA president J.C. Treader said a couple of years ago. It sparked a grievance. The NFL won it earlier this year in a slam dunk. You shouldn't do that. The union can't induce players to essentially violate the CBA. But the point that someone made with me, and this makes a lot of sense, when you get guys who have been playing football 20 years, there's always something that you could point to and say, this thing keeps me from practicing. And there's always something you're playing through. There's always something you're dealing with. Bone spurs, hip flexor, whatever it may be, there's always something. So it makes more sense for a guy like Terry McLaurin, Micah Parsons, Trey Hendrickson to say, hey, I've got this chronic thing and I can't practice. Where it gets interesting is when week one rolls around. Will you set aside your desire to play football for this effort to get more? You still get paid, but you're not playing. And I guess, you know, it's six of one, half a dozen the other on getting paid, but you're not playing and guys want to play. And I think that's where it becomes the biggest challenge for the guys who are in camp and who want to get paid and who haven't gotten paid yet.
What would the recourse be for a team then? If talking about the nuclear scenario here, Mike, where McLaurin says, yep, my ankle still bothering me. And we just kind of go through months of this, even if the team suspects that there's nothing wrong, which this is my opinion. I'm not a medical doctor. I don't think there's anything wrong. I think he didn't have a contract that he likes. But how long can that go on, and what's the team's recourse then if they're basically suspicious of him not being completely forthright when it comes to his own injury?
Well, they better paper the hell out of the record. They got to rely on their lawyers, and they get into an HR problem, you know, similar to what the Raiders went through and will go through with Christian Wilkins. Mm-hmm. Different but similar. You got to be able to prove that this guy's full of crap. You got to be able to develop evidence that this isn't real. And if you get into a battle of doctors, good luck winning that, because the player's entitled to rely upon and has a right to a second opinion, has a right to rely on it. And so it becomes an ugly, messy path to try to say we're not going to pay him, or we're going to suspend him for conduct detrimental to the team, or whatever the case may be. But that's the risk. When you're in the building and you're creating a distraction, pushing it to the TO limit from 20 years ago, and I can't believe it's been 20 years, but it was 20 years ago this year, where he decided, I'm going to show up and I'm going to be a massive pain in the ass until they trade me or cut me. If you push it too far, they're going to suspend you up to 4 games at a time without pay.
At Pro Football Talk, Mike Florio. Pivoting to a guy you mentioned in an answer earlier, Micah Parsons. This one feels a little different, or as Jerry calls him, Michael Parson. No wonder he's negotiating with the wrong guy, Mike. In Terry's case, the team is saying you're 30. Guys fall off at that age. We can't pay you top 5 money. McLaurin's saying, yeah, but I'm going into year 7, 8, 9. That's what matters more. I understand the impasse. The Cowboys thing just feels more like Dallas-Dallasing a little bit. Like, what is going on there?
Well, and it's Dallas pushing things to a point with the wrong guy. And the Cowboys love to drag their feet. They love to negotiate directly with players. And I explained this last night on the Hall of Fame pregame show, and it's all come to fruition today. The Cowboys had a conversation with Micah Parsons in March that he thought was about leadership. And then at the end, the Cowboys thought they had a deal for Micah's next contract. And Micah said, no, you got to talk to my agent. And they have refused to engage his agent ever since in conversations about the contract. Now, the CBA makes it clear that if there is an agreement, it needs to be reduced to writing as soon as practical. And it hasn't been. It's been months. And under the CBA, you know, the union is the exclusive representative of all players. They certify individual agents to be the exclusive representative of each player that hires them. Micah Parsons is hired. Dave Mulugeta of Athletes First. That's who the Cowboys are required under labor law to deal with. And I don't know how they keep getting away with it. They used to do it with Dak Prescott. They used to do it with Ezekiel Elliott. They love to negotiate directly with the player because they know the player is more likely to cave than the agent. They don't want to deal with the agent because the agent makes it harder to get the deal done. Nobody wants to deal with agents because agents make it harder to get deals done on the terms the team wants. Well, now it's blown up in their faces. And the next move is going to be very interesting because the Cowboys try to say, oh, wait, oh, no, oh, Micah, let's work this out. And Micah says, no, it's too late. You had your chance. You pissed me off, and I don't want to play for you anymore. I'm not going to play for you. That's what it comes down to. Will he take this back if it works? And if it doesn't work, what's going to happen? Is this back tightness that has kept him from practicing for 2 weeks of training camp going to keep him from playing this year, or is he going to get the contract he wants and finally show up for the Cowboys? And they may say, we have no intention to trade him, but you know what's going to happen? Teams that are interested are going to start calling, and they're going to offer a couple of first-round picks plus for Micah Parsons, and they'll pay Michael what he wants. And who knows? Maybe the Cowboys decide this is the one we're not going to pay. This is the one we're going to move on from, and we're going to rebuild the team with the extra draft capital. I think it would be ludicrous for them to do it, but I think it's ludicrous for them to let it get to this point.
What's a realistic timetable? Back to, I guess we include Parsons in this too, for McLaurin, Parsons to have some kind of resolution here, Mike, whether it's back under contract or an actual trade consummated.
Well, football's a deadline-driven business. Week one makes the most sense. Week one. So you want your guys to be ready to go for the start of the season, but that's the problem. When you're talking about these high-stakes negotiations, nobody likes to move to their bottom line early, because if you move to your bottom line early, you're going to get squeezed off of it when the clock is actually striking 12. And that's why it's important to have good relationships with agents, people that you deal with on a regular basis, where you can say, hey, let's set a fake deadline that we're going to honor, like, you know, the end of the offseason program or the start of the offseason program or the start of training camp. But let's do something that ensures that the player will be ready to go when the games start. That's the problem that we've seen with the Cowboys. They wait until, you know, right at the start of the season. Last year with Dak Prescott, right at the start of the season. Now, he practiced, but still it was hovering over the team. CeeDee Lamb holds out, signs a deal right before the start of the season. So I think that makes the most sense practically, although I think it would be a lot smarter for both sides to get the deals done, get the situation resolved as soon as possible. And it's just unfortunate. It's unfortunate, especially for the Commanders, because it's not like they have a clear alternative to Terry McLaurin. They need his leadership. They need his experience. And it just takes some of that glow away from a team that feels like it's ready to take the next step. And it's up to the team. You know, it's the player taking full advantage of the leverage that is inherent to where the team is and where the player is.
Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk. We'll let you out on this one, Mike. This Christian Wilkins situation and the idea that he might have been cut over supposedly playfully kissing his teammate, I think you came out and said that just doesn't make sense, which is kind of what most of us were thinking. I know there's some backstory floating around that isn't ready for public yet, but where are we going with this story? This was wild.
Well, there's two things to remember here with Christian Wilkins, and there are two different ways that the Raiders possibly will be able to wipe out $35.2 million in guarantees on top of $49.7 million they've already paid him in cash through a year and a half of his four-year $110 million contract. If they can prove that there was some sort of default that happened through his failure to properly repair and rehab his foot injury, that gives them license to cut off the guarantees. They tried to do that back in early June. They made that clear that they were voiding guarantees, and Wilkins filed a grievance to fight that. This other issue, and it's similar to the device that the Ravens used to cut off Earl Thomas's guaranteed money 5 years ago, where because guaranteed money, fully guaranteed money, isn't fully and completely guaranteed. It's guaranteed for skill, injury, and salary cap. So you can cut a guy for a different reason and not owe him his guaranteed money. And the Ravens cut Earl Thomas for personal conduct detrimental to the interest of the team. Now, if the Raiders are going to try that with Wilkins as it relates to whatever happened with a teammate, whatever it was, the key piece of paper is the form that the Raiders filled out when they terminated him, because there's a box that you check. And if they check that box, personal conduct adverse to the interest of the team, that tells us they're going to try to use that as a fallback to avoid the guarantee. So it's going to be a mess. It's going to be a matter of grievance and arbitration. And because it all happened secretly and quietly, who knows if we ever find out what happened. But $35.2 million is riding on it. That relationship's over. And then separately, is Christian Wilkins able to play? I'm starting to hear that maybe his representation is realizing he may need the surgery that he'd been resisting.
Mike, awesome with us as always, man. Have an awesome weekend.
Thanks, guys.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk on Grant and Danny.
He's so quick.
Here on the Fan.
He's so quick on the hang-up.
The fastest hang-up maybe in show history. I think he's overtaken Michael Lombardi.
I mean, it's the two Mikes neck and neck.
Lombardi, now the GM of North Carolina. Maybe he's in North Carolina. He's eating a little barbecue. He's in the college game. Maybe
his feet are up on the desk. He's got the headset, and he's leaning back. So now he's got to lean forward and hang up.
I would understand that fast of a hang-up if you had a landline phone and you could just hit the button on like the base
of the
phone. You're
hovering over the receiver to smack
it. But he actually has to take it off his ear and hit end on a cell phone. He has to hit the red circle.
Do you think it's a great Bluetooth and he's holding the phone up so that he can just hit end?
No, because you would be able to tell audio-wise. It's clear. It wouldn't be on Bluetooth.
I couldn't ever be that fast.
I think what he's doing is, as he's saying goodbye, the phone is already being moved off of his ear and like to in front of him. So he's like, all right, see ya. As he's, like,
yeah,
there's an understanding the conversation's ending. So the see ya happens with the phone being held in front of him, and he's already tapping it as he says see ya.
I mean, lightning fast.
It's really incredible.
Lightning McQueen fast.
Efficiency. Albert Breer is at Raiders camp. He's doing some interviews and in and out of the locker room, but we think we're going to be catching up with him in just a few. He had a lot of insight today and a nice thread he did on social about the McLaurin situation. He, of course, of MMQB and SI. So we'll try to catch up with Breer here in moments, getting you the latest on everything going on. Big story in town, Terry McLaurin and the Commanders. Plus, we're awaiting word on the vote that should be coming down any minute now from the D.C. City Council. We're Grant and Danny on the Fan.
Breaking news here into the Fan. After a 29-year hiatus, the Commanders are one step closer to returning to the nation's capital. Moments ago, the D.C. City Council approved by a 9-3 vote the $3.8 billion project to build a brand new 65,000-seat stadium for the Washington Commanders. This, along with an adjacent entertainment district, the team will spend close to $2.7 billion on the stadium, and the city will spend $1.1 billion on infrastructure and parking. The amended bill got across the finish line after the team committed to additional union jobs and a second hotel in that entertainment district. Things are not final, as a second and final vote will occur on September the 17th. Got Nats baseball tonight here on the Fan as well, as they begin a six-game homestand as they take on the Milwaukee Brewers tonight. Pre-game coverage gets rolling at 6:15. First pitch set for 6:45. From the Crop Metcalf Five-Star Sports Desk, I'm Lanelle Willingham on the Fan.
Quite a development. 9-3 vote. We are headed toward conclusion today. It sounds like, from what I'm being told from in the room, there's one more technical vote. I don't know what that means, but that it looks like it's going to go down officially as 9-3. D.C. So I guess the info we got from Eric Flack yesterday was right on.
Yes.
They had 7 votes. They thought they could get to 8. Today they strike a deal to add Parker and I think it was Lewis. They were the ones that were holding out over what Flack said was this labor dispute where they wanted labor workers used at a certain rate. The deal was struck with the Commanders and more so, I think, the mayor and the city today. And so you went from 7-9. You got a 9-3 vote. Now, things can change with this bill, which is a good thing and a bad thing, I guess. And on September 17th, they'll vote again because for some reason that I can't quite figure out, D.C. has to vote on everything twice.
2 times.
But nothing D.C. does from a local government standpoint makes a whole lot of sense to me. So I'll just wear it and just ask questions of the smart people that know what's going on. So September 17th, they will do this vote again. And after that is when this thing would potentially go to Congress. Why it has to go to Congress for some type of approval, again, I don't really know. But this is one step of several steps. This was the biggest step so far. Mm-hmm. They had to get the city council to vote on and approve that they would spend $1.1 billion on infrastructure and parking around a stadium the team is building for $2.7 billion. And today, at a 9-3 clip, that is happening.
Those other votes could not happen today. The finished product, end of the construction, couldn't happen today. All that was available to us was this decision going in this direction. So it's as big as it can be today, and it's pretty major. Because it was in doubt, quite frankly, when you started to ask each individual council member who is, you know, at least in theory, acting on behalf of their constituents, wanting this part of the labor deal, wanting this element of a certain amount of union work and D.C. residents and this and that. Everybody put their hand out and got a little something extra, it seems like, and they reworked the deal some to everybody's satisfaction. So today, it went, if you're a stadium advocate, it went as good as it can go.
Yeah, they got a better deal for the city, which was their goal and what they should do. That's their job.
Totally.
No problem with that. My frustration all along was this idea that this thing could and would go on in perpetuity. And we had one council member after another coming on to tell us, we'll vote in the fall, we'll get to it in the fall. That's not going to work for me. It's not going to work for the Commanders. So that was annoying. But the good news is that Mendelsohn strikes a deal and it's not waiting until the fall. They vote today on August 1st and they will vote again on September 17th. And this thing will be hopefully over at that point from a local government standpoint. So there have been a lot of good moments, a lot of huge developments. This is certainly one of them. Speaking of the Commanders, the bad news today is that Terry McLaurin has requested a trade. Let's get some insight on that from our buddy Albert Breer, a national reporter who's got great insight on all of the news of the goings-on of the National Football League, senior reporter, lead content strategist over at the MMQB. So, Albert, are you surprised that Terry McLaurin requested a trade yesterday, and how big of a deal is that in this stare down?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've started to see the signs of frustration and trying to pull every lever. And I think you guys know Terry well enough to know how far he'd need to be pushed to get to the point where he would, you know, press this sort of nuclear button, right? Like, but tried to hold out, then tried to hold in. And, you know, this is sort of, I guess, the last lever that you can pull. Do I think he wants to remain with the Commanders? Yes. But, you know, like these things can sometimes get this way. And I think there's some urgency on Terry's part because
this may be the last deal of this level. He does. The numbers would tell you, like, this will be the last deal, last top-of-the-market deal that he'll do as a pro football player. And then on the flip side, you have a team that I think is, you know, again, reshaped their front office and has been disciplined about valuing players. And it's not that they won't pay him a really reasonable rate. It's just how far they're willing to go, you know. And you guys know data and analytics and all that different stuff can play into it.
So what did it really mean? I know I hate that kind of question. It's a very open-ended sociology paper here, Albert. But it doesn't really mean anything other than I'm still upset, and I want to let you know how upset. From Terry's camp, from the team's perspective, I don't know that any sort of ultimatum is reached. What did that announcement that he's demanding a trade, what do you think it means in the grand scheme?
It means he's frustrated with the pace of negotiations and how the team hasn't moved very far off of their initial position. And, you know, I think, like, the slow playing of these things can sometimes get to players, you know, because, and look, I think it's for different reasons. In some cases, it's because the player just wants to get his money. In other cases, it's because there are other people in his life that are pushing buttons. You know, I think in this case, if I had to guess, and I'm not going to climb in Terry's head, but, you know, I think for Terry, just knowing what he's about, it very well could just be like, I want to be able to focus on football and the season that I'm going to have now. And normally, you know, when you get to the end of July, beginning of August, I'm able to do that. And I can't do that because the business of football is getting in the way. So is there something I can do to accelerate some sort of conclusion here, whether that conclusion is the Commanders moving and making more of a move in what they're offering, or me getting traded out of here? You know, that'd be my sense, you know. And again, like, I haven't talked to Terry about it, so I don't know. But, you know, if I had to put the pieces together, I'd say the pace of negotiations and how all of that relates to his, you know, his ability to prepare full on for a football season, I think, is what it comes down to. And I mean, look, like, I think it's pretty well established what the market is. And, you know, the edge rusher and receiver market are two markets that have exploded over the last couple of years. So I don't think it's any coincidence that some of these things, whether it's CeeDee Lamb, Micah Parsons, Myles Garrett, TJ Watt, I don't think it's any surprise that some of these have gotten ugly. You know, in almost every case, I think it's worth noting those guys end up staying with their teams. You know, there are cases where they can't find a middle ground, and then you have to find a solution after that.
Albert, is there any way this ends with Terry McLaurin not playing for the Commanders early this season? I mean, we go round and around on this, and Danny and I have talked about this, as you can imagine, from a million different angles. But every single time I come back to the same inevitability, which is with him being under contract and then being able to tag him potentially next year, he's just going to play eventually. Like, how else could this end?
Yeah, I mean, they can tag him the next 2 years, you know, which gives them a lot of leverage in this situation. I think the one thing, and again, like, I don't think in either of the situations, it's easy right now because of timing to tie this to Micah and what's happening in Dallas. I don't think in either of these situations, they're very different, but I think the one similarity between the two is, like, the teams don't have an intention to trade these guys. That said, what this is going to do is this is going to prompt some teams sniffing around and seeing what it might take. And so, you know, I think for another team, it's more costly than it is for the Commanders. And that's one thing that you have to remember, right? Like, so for the Commanders, it's just the money. It's just the contract. For another team looking at this, it's the contract plus the draft picks or active players that they're going to have to fork over. So there's an additional cost. So another team is going to have to come in and go that much further than the Commanders are willing to go to do a deal that would work for everybody, you know? And so the question is there a team out there that would do that? I don't know. I remember covering the Khalil Mack situation. Was it 7-8 years ago now? Maybe more than that. I'm getting old. But you know, the Raiders didn't have any desire to trade Khalil Mack.
And then the offers started coming, and eventually it got to a point where there was something out there they couldn't refuse. I don't know if they'll get to that point with Terry, but that's the one reason why I wouldn't rule out a trade, is because, you know, you never know what the team on the other end of the phone is going to be offering.
How much damage could this do for, I mean, right now, like, everything is roses for this Washington front office, new ownership, just because, I mean, what we all just went through for decades, Albert, I mean, it's no secret. It was just a disaster every day. It was a collapsed circus tent. But now, this is their first kind of fork in the road sort of moment. How much damage could this do sort of league-wide for rep with players, et cetera? What's kind of our worst case?
Well, I mean, I think the one thing that gives Terry, like, this subtle, like, piece of leverage is who he is, you know? And again, like, I think he's such an important piece of what they've built there. And I think DQ would tell you that there's nobody in that building that personifies what they're looking for in players, what they're saying is a commander more than Terry McLaurin does, you know? And so, I think for that reason, like, if you pay him, there's not going to be any, like people in the locker room would be like, okay, like that's what you reward. There's a benefit to that, you know? If you trade him, there's going to be a little bit of like, what the hell is going on here? You know, now I think DQ is good enough at his job and that staff's good enough that they would work past that. Then there'd be the obvious on-field cost, which is like, how do you make it work at receiver with what they've got? And that's why I think like, it's almost have to be another player coming back, right? Like in a deal if they were going to do one. So, you know, I'm with the Raiders today. They could use a receiver. Would it be Jacoby Myers and then a high draft pick coming back to give you something to work with on offense? You know, I know the Patriots have been mentioned there. There's the Ohio State connection with Vrabel. You know, would it be, all right, like Stephon Diggs and his contract are going to Washington as a one-year solution for the Commanders and a high draft pick comes on top of that, you know? I would think because of the logistics of where the Commanders are at the receiver spot. I mean, let me ask you guys this. If you take Terry out of the equation, would that be the weakest position group on the team?
Got to be close.
Close to it.
Yeah, I would think actually it is probably.
It probably is, right? Yeah. Like I would say it's so there's that consideration. And to me, like that flies in the face of everything. Everything they've done this offseason has been like, we're going for it. You know, we're going to take advantage of having a superstar quarterback on a rookie contract for the next couple of years. And that's what the Laremy Tunsil trade is and the Deebo Samuel trade and the Marshawn Lattimore trade going back to last November. Like all of these moves point to like, we believe we have a chance to win right now. And, you know, I think moving off of Terry McLaurin not only kicks a leg from underneath the development of your young quarterback, it also affects that goal that you've had, you know? So I think it would take a lot for them to trade him is what I'm saying. And they have made offers, you know, like this isn't like the Dallas situation where there's just been a whole lot of nothing. That said, they haven't gotten anywhere of late, you know, like there was about a month and a half of complete silence and then not much movement when they resumed talks. You know, I think that was near the beginning of training camp. So I think where this goes next, you know, sort of depends on how much the Commanders are willing to move off of their spot. And I think, you know, how close they're willing to get to, you know, what I think is probably the fairest comp, which is the DK Metcalf deal, which was at $33 million per. It really resulted in a deal that was like 150 over five with $60 million fully guaranteed in the first 2 years.
Albert Breer, MMQB, really good insight. We know you got a camp tour going here with the Raiders today. Thank you. We appreciate you.
You got it, guys.
Thanks, Albert.
Be good. There's Albert Breer on Grant and Danny with the latest on everything going on with Terry McLaurin. 9-3 vote in favor of the Commanders coming back to D.C. by the D.C. City Council. This is a massive development. Feels like, you know, not a time necessarily to throw a big party, but this is close. September 17th is that day when the second of the two votes is going to happen. Assuming nothing changes, it'll go swimmingly. If it sounds like 9-3, nothing to worry about, they'll still need 8 yeses, and that just means, you know, in a time where things could change to the deal and two people could change their mind, it's possible, but it certainly looks very good. If you're curious, the people that voted against it on the city council, Brianne Nadeau, who we knew would vote against it because she says not 1 cent for a billionaire and a stadium. Councilmember Matt Fruman, who I know nothing about. We have not had him on. He hasn't responded to any of our inquiries. And then our guy Robert White, who sat in that seat, came in studio with us, held out, said no to the Commanders. He was the only of all the people that we've talked to about this that didn't eventually crossed the line to vote for the stadium. So we got to get Robert White back on and ask him what went wrong.
What happened?
Why he decided to be such a silly goose
today. What did they not put in there?
Yeah. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Our double play is next. Nine to three vote in favor of the Commanders coming back to D.C. from the city council within the last hour. I'm actually shocked that our guy Charles Allen voted yes.
He was always going to come around. Everyone knew that.
Respectfully to Mark Klaus and the Commanders, who have had to keep tweaking the deal and making it better and better for the city and taking them out to dinner and listening to all of their concerns and trying to make the deal better for them. I'm going to say that us having Charles Allen on and badgering him a bunch is actually what got him to vote yes on this thing. Friend of the program, Charles Allen, who was just against the deal at every turn, he said, yes, we got to get Charles Allen on and give him a little attaboy. Give him a little slap on the butt. I guess he's a city council member.
Yeah, but in an appropriate way.
A verbal slap on the ass.
There it is.
To Charles Allen for saying yes.
Mm-hmm.
Attaboy, Charles.
Attababy.
Daniel will tell him, Mr. Council Member, sir.
Mr. Council Member.
Whatever the bit he does. Honor of the council member, sir.
What was there was one you're just like, you know what, I'm not doing that. It was either at large or something.
I'll just peel back the curtain a little bit.
Yeah.
I have respect for my elders. I have respect for people of office. But Danny does this bit when we get people on. He's done it when we've had everybody from senators to, I think we've talked to a governor, to now the DC City Council. And he does this thing where he's like, your honorary member of the board, Mrs. Madam, thy. And yeah, I'm like,
I say the title. What you wouldn't do is chair pro tempore, yes, for at-large council member Kenya McDuffie.
Kenya McDuffie was coming on, and I'm like, all right, Kenya McDuffie's coming on. I said, I believe he's the at-large council member. And Danny goes, he's chair tempore, papalada. Like, he's the tempura of the champatada.
He's the shrimp tempura.
Right. And what did I tell you right before he went on?
You literally go, I'm not doing that.
No, here's exactly what I said. I said, he goes to McDonald's just like I do. It'll be okay. Mr. Council Member, sir. I'm sure. I'll see him in the McDonald's line. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Just a guy. Now, I'm going to be respectful when they're on the air, but
sure.
This idea of like, I'll, you know, sit here and you can stand and over me. And I mean, it's just not a thing that we're going to be doing. I can't remember who we had on one time, but I remember like turning off the mic. They'd been talking for like 3 or 4 minutes, and I think I had asked them 4 or 5 questions, jumping in every now and then, and Danny had not said a word. And I said, are you going to ask anything? He's like, well, I'm not going to cut him off. You didn't say he's a politician.
He's like a senator or something.
You're like, he's an elected member of, whatever. And I'm like, well, then you're just going to let him talk for 12 minutes on your radio show? Like, what? And you're like, I'm not going to interrupt him. I'm like, well, he knows that too, buddy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I hope you don't watch any late night news.
He's been around.
But anyway, it's just kind of funny. But anyway, you get to use all your misses and misters and all this stuff if we get these guys on to thank them.
Sure, yeah,
won't that be exciting?
Just say the name of the elected office.
What is it? Shrimp tempura?
Yes.
What was it actually?
It is the shrimp tempura special.
No, it's the pro tempore.
It is the chair pro tempore.
I'm sure.
I mean, you can be as sure as you want. It's a unicameral legislation, bro.
Well, I've never been more sure about anything. But I'll let you go ahead and handle that when we get to it.
You're getting all pissy because I call the chairman Mr. Chairman. Like, that's what you're supposed to do.
It's not just that. I mean, that one's a lot, but it's not just like there's just a little bit too much of whatever that is for me. There's a guy coming back on who just did some pretty bad things. There's just going to be right back like it's nothing. Like,
duly elected office, man.
Yeah. You call him whatever you want to. I'll just say council member Mr. McDuffie.
He'll be council member when he gets back on in September.
It is time for our double play. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. Driven by your local Washington area Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. Visit your local Washington area Honda dealer today.
So, GP, you got kids. You know how this goes.
A few of them. Four of them, in fact.
You have so many. I have a lot. And when you do something for one, you got to be prepared to do something similar for the other. So I'm going to another movie tonight.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
Nobody and I mean nobody,
it's so many movies,
is on more of a movie theater heater than Danny Hutier, the pro tempore of movie folks.
I'm the sushi pro tempore of movies. So I saw Fantastic Four with my oldest because he wanted to. My seven-year-old asked if he could come, and I said probably not appropriate for him. In retrospect, maybe he could have done it, but I wasn't sure, you know, if there are any adult themes or things like that. It was probably the right call to not have him go to that Marvel movie because it's PG-13. But he's like, now I want to go to a movie. He's never cared about going to the movies before. He's never cared about anything other than Roblox and, like, you know, wrestling with me when I get home from work. Well, now we got to go to a movie. So we're going to go see something appropriate for his age, obviously. It's called The Bad Guys 2. Do you have any file on this?
Let me get out of my face.
Do you?
Yeah, The Bad Guys 1 is probably one of the top five movies in my kid's childhood. So, yeah, it's a smashola. The Bad Guys was a 10 out of 10. The Bad
Guys 2. I've never heard of that.
We're going to be there Sunday. We'll be there. This is our next big one that my kids watch the trailer of every morning at 8 a.m. The Bad Guys 2.
What is it?
The Bad Guys is a film. A bunch of famous people doing voices, including Marc Maron. Basically, it's the idea is it's animals that are considered bad. So it's like a wolf and a snake and a piranha and some other stuff. And everybody, when they walk into the room, just assumes that they're evil anyway. So, like, they get no benefit of the doubt. So they're, like, trying to be good. And they're like, all right, well, if you're going to act like we're bad anyway.
We'll just be bad. Yeah.
They're trying to be good. And everyone's, like, handing over money as they walk into the restaurant, like, putting their hands up.
Well, that's a good bit.
And they're like, okay, then we'll just be the bad guys. And they actually were that for a long time. They would have all these heists. And it's like heist movie, basically. So in the second one, I'm sure you haven't seen the trailer, it sounds like.
I've seen nothing.
They've turned good. At the end of the movie, they turned good with the mayor. I don't think it was like Muriel Bowser necessarily, but it was...
She struck a deal with the Commanders.
Right. They struck a deal with the local football operation and a 9-3 vote. They're coming back to the city. But yeah, they've turned good. But now in the movie, this bad person finds them and is making them do like one more job, basically. So you're going to see a heist movie with characters that include... like a snake and a fox and stuff like that. The first one was silly. I was a big fan of it, and I can't wait. We're going Sunday.
Nice. So, yeah, so I'm going to see a Craig movie tonight. But, yeah, my seven-year-old's excited about it, man. I guess we'll, you know, it's another $100 in popcorn and one water.
Oh, you're going to – now, it's just you two?
Yeah.
Okay, imagine tripling that.
I know.
That's what we're doing on Sunday. I'm going to go to the Universal Circus with the kids tomorrow.
Universal.
Cannot wait. We loved it. When it was here a couple years ago, my kids were right up there, front row, basically.
What'd you do on stage?
That was another thing, yes. One of the nights, through like the radio, I had to go there for an event, and I had to go up on stage in front of thousands of people and do a weird dance.
Did you dance? Were you hypnotized? What was the bit?
I had to be in a boxing match, and then whatever they told me to do, I had to do. So I had to like act like I was falling down, and then I had to do like a weird dance when I got up because I was knocked out, and I had taken a new personality or something. There was a lot.
But, like, how in control of that were you? Like, were you hypnotized and did that? Or you just did it as part of the show?
There's no Flip Orly hypnotizing. This was just me.
They're like, Grant, you're hired. Like, you're part of the show this weekend.
They told me, like, hey, when we do this, come up and I'll just tell you what to do. And it was like the clowns and me.
Oh, my God.
And I did it.
First of all, that's wild. I can't believe you agreed to that. Third of all.
I didn't know what I was agreeing to.
Why? That's what I'm saying.
CK came to me and was like, hey, you want to go to the circus and, like, be there as a representative of the radio station. I'm like, sure. And then that turned into me dancing on stage.
You're on stage with other clowns.
Didn't really get all the information before I got there.
It reminds me, I'm watching the WWE behind the scenes show, which is so good, by the way.
Oh, God, it's great.
And I just passed the Royal Rumble, and some YouTuber that I've never heard of, but I guess he's famous.
Speed.
The Speed guy.
Yeah.
That was the bit they did for that show.
Correct.
Where they pretended that he was just like, okay, you got to fill in for some injured guy. And he went out there and like did okay and then like got really hurt, which is kind of amazing. But that's what it reminds me of, is you basically did that.
Universal Circus tomorrow. Bad Boys 2 Sunday.
Are you in the show?
Big weekend for the Paulsons. I don't believe so. I certainly hope not.
Okay.
That is not supposed to be the case this time. I'm taking my kids, so I really can't be. What am I, leaving them in the seats and
I don't know.
Wandering up on stage for a while? Unless they plan on me being one of the flying Willendas or something. Because I could do that.
The Flying Paul Sandus.
Yes. But tomorrow, I'll see you guys at the Universal Circus. Beltway Blitz is next on Grant and Danny. We're taking you up to 6:15 in Nats baseball tonight on The Fan.